Welcome to the Barbell Coach and Physio. Diving deep into all things powerlifting, strength, and rehab. Your hosts are Matthew Burton from River City Barbell and Laura Fox from Fox Physiotherapy and Strength Rehab.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barbell Coach and Physio. Thanks for listening in. I hope everyone's having a great day and a good start to their week. So today on today's episode, I had on Josh Dusenberg from Nexus Performance. He works down in Burley at the Nexus Performance Gym and also is a coach for Nexus Performance. Josh and I had a very similar story when it comes to mental health. So recently Josh has spoke about what he's been through and things he has dealt with in the past 5 to 6 years. And he put it out like openly and being vulnerable on social media to try and get rid of some insecurities that he had himself. So when Josh told me, or I read, listened to his video on social media, I automatically wanted to get him on here and have a chat because I do feel like it's a topic that comes up a lot in mental health, and a lot of the stuff to do with what Josh has been through could help a lot of people. But also his story is amazing and really good, and it inspires a lot of people. And I like to share this type of stuff with people because I understand that a lot of people are in the same position as both myself and Josh and our story, and it helps other people grow and be able to understand how they can get help and become better at who they are and become better humans too, because their mental health can be improved. But Josh is an amazing coach as well. Great dude. So I hope you guys really enjoy this episode. But yeah, also if you guys listen to the potty regular and you want to try our sponsor stuff, just use our discount code. So we've got Cyborg for protein and then 5 Active for energy drink. Links down in the bio for the websites, and if you just use our codes, you will get a discount. So yeah, if you guys enjoy the episode, please reshare, and thanks for listening. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barbell Coach and Physio. Today on this episode, we have Josh from Nexus. Josh's got an interesting story. I wanted to get him on and have a chat just about some of the stuff he's been through recently, but also in his past, because, you know, like I love to talk on this podcast a little bit about mental health and stuff I've been through. But I think that Josh's story in the last couple of years has been pretty like interesting, but also wanted to talk a little bit about with it all about Josh with, you know, and show that everyone, when I talk about mental health and that and how I'm vulnerable about things, it's like easy to show how males are also on the other side of that through Josh's story and what he's recently put out, because I would have had no idea at all what Josh has been through at all. And I see Josh a lot of the times, and just what he's been through, I like had no idea at all. So it's crazy to hear that on. And when I heard his video, I was just like, whoa. So how are you, Josh?
Good, man. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. Things are good, you know, kicking along. So do you want to give us a little bit of an insight about yourself? Like, just give us some history from, like, your childhood, how you got into, like, everything, where you are today, like, just a bit of an analogue.
Yeah, well, okay. So I think, yeah, Matt mentioned it. Like, obviously, at the moment, I'm working for Nexus Performance down here on the Gold Coast. I'm the face-to-face trainer out of the gym. Sports for me, or, like, just generally fitness and things like that, have been pretty much my life since before I can remember. So I first started playing AFL at 3 years old. All through school, I played AFL, hockey, mixed netball, athletics, touch footy, orienteering, cross country, like pretty much any sport I could get involved in, I was playing to some degree. Right up into high school, probably grade 10, 11, 12, I was doing sports 7 days a week.
How good's netball, bro? I played netball when I was in school.
Dude, mixed netting's sick. Mixed netting was sick. It was like, we had to do it as a...
It's so fucking hard.
Yeah, we had to... Well, see, it's funny because mixed netball, netball in general and AFL actually have a lot of similarities in the gameplay.
Yeah.
So the positions are almost identical. The actual gameplay itself is almost identical, except obviously it's a netball is more stop-start.
Yeah.
But the way in which you have to clear the ball from a back line through the center, through to the forwards, et cetera, to try and shoot was very, very similar to AFL. So I could just have that correlation between the two.
Oh, cool.
And like, it sounds bad, but I was relatively tall and I would just jump and unfortunately just take out the chicks all the time. Because I'm used to AFL where you can like jump and you use your knee to protect yourself, but you also use it to like gain leverage. And netball, you're not allowed to do that. So I would just like full launch myself, not even really thinking or paying attention and just copping knees everywhere. But yeah, and then like through high school and stuff, I actually started coaching AFL at 13. Cool. So I was coaching under nines when I was 13, 14 with one of my best mates at the time. I did that for a couple of years and then the original goal was to actually become a PE teacher, which fell through just due to like things we'll find out in a moment, like when we have the discussion a little bit further into some other stuff. But I just I was only in school for sport and then I just really struggled to get through year 11 and 12 with certain aspects of things. So I ended up just dropping it and whatever. I just kept doing whatever I was doing with school. I was relatively intelligent. Like I was in all the extension classes and stuff, but I just couldn't really focus on anything. And then post high school, like I grew up in Townsville and I moved out of Townsville. I think it was like 4 weeks after I graduated school. I just packed everything into my little Suzuki Swift and drove down to the Gold Coast. And I got into university to do sports management, just a diploma down here. Finished that. And through that year, I was just like surfing and trying to learn to surf and everything like that. And funnily enough, through that process with uni, one of the uni lecturers was like, oh yeah, if you want to get better at surfing, like go to the gym. And I was a skinny little runt of a kid. Like I was 6'2" and I graduated school at 55 kilos. So I was tiny, like so disgustingly small, just due to being so active and just never eating. And so I was like, oh, this is it. This is the secret. I'm going to become a pro surfer just by going to the gym. So I went and joined a Snap Fitness in Palm Beach and then didn't attend for 10 months. So just never went.
I think everyone did that with their first gym too. I did that. I had HealthWorks, but
oh yeah, I'm pretty sure that they're like most gyms just run on the basis of people never turning up, because I was funding that gym. I was funding their Christmas party for sure. Yeah. And then it wasn't actually until I sort of had some shit go down, like mentally, where I was like, oh okay, maybe I should just go to the gym. Like I feel pretty good when I go there. I'll just roll in and start training. And I'd be going to the gym at like 11, 12, 1 a.m. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was watching YouTube videos, or I'd screenshot workouts off of bodybuilding.com and just go into the gym really late at night and just follow exactly what it said on the little pictures and whatever. Watch YouTube videos on like, oh, how to train shoulders. And then I'd watch some bullshit juice monkey fucking 35-hour shoulder workout and try and recreate it myself. And I was just like, yeah, this isn't probably going to work for me.
Yeah. It's funny because the whole bodybuilding.com thing, like I never went through that phase. Like I literally like for years I did like fighting and then I came into powerlifting and I like literally just got a coach that they decided I was going to do powerlifting. And I have so many people come on the podcast and they're like, yeah, I was on bodybuilding.com. Like, man, I wish I went through that phase so I could have learned that shit.
Well, see, I don't even think I learned anything. I was just like legitimately, because there was bodybuilding.com, you could like sign up to certain programs. And at the time, because I was a uni student, I signed up to Steve Cook's Collegiate Gym Hero program or some shit or whatever it was called. And it was just like basically being in college, trying to bulk on a budget and get big.
Tuna and rye.
And so I was just, that's exactly what it was. But like my diet was fucked at that point. I'm not even going to get into that. But then I kind of just kept training like for years and I went through multiple different phases. Like I started off, I guess you'd say, quote unquote, bodybuilding more style, just general gym. And then I moved into calisthenics of all things. So body weight training. And then I hated, like, I was just really skinny still. Like I was lean as, and I was relatively like jacked through your upper body, but I just had no legs. And so I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to go start squatting, benching, deadlifting, etc. And through that, of all things, I just randomly found strength coach's Thor's Power Program. And I was like, this is it. This is the secret. I'm going to get jacked. I'm going to get strong as on this. And so I run that for 12 weeks. And I actually got like reasonably decent strength gains on it, to be honest. Through the 12-week period, I went from 155 kilo to 200 kilo squat, a 115 bench to 140, and like never deadlifting over 160 to deadlifting 220.
That's crazy.
Oh, sorry, 210.
It's funny what like periodization can do to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was literally my first exposure to an actual program.
Yeah.
Like to actually follow in some form of structured program. I'd never done it before. I'd never had a program. I never structured anything. I would literally just roll into the gym and train whatever I wanted. And then I kind of just kept – I really liked that style of training, kept doing it. And then I was like, oh, yeah, cool, I'll go compete. I was like, oh, I'll go do powerlifting. It seems like a fun sport. Let's just go try that. And then COVID hit. I just had some weights and shit that I'd had because I became a PT through this process. And one of the gyms I was at the time, they just gave us all a bunch of equipment. And we're like, yeah, here, you can still train people at home or in the park or whatever. And I was like, yeah, cool. And I can train myself. So this is great. So I was just training at home for that whole period. And from there, once COVID ended and stuff like that, I was like, yeah, I'd probably like to give this powerlifting thing a crack again. And that's when I reached out to Will from Nexus and just started doing coaching with him and went did a few sessions with him. And then, yeah, I've been coached by Will now for 2.5 years, and I have been working for Nexus for a little bit over 12 months.
I think you skipped the part where you talk about when you first met Will.
Fuck. So that's probably the most awkward interaction ever in a gym, ever. Anyone who's met Will knows that like him in a public gym, just it doesn't work. He's too large and too just like... There's just too much going on for him.
Nowadays, he's not as awkward as he used to be. He used to be so awkward. Like when I first met him 5 years ago, he was like so awkward to talk to. And now he's like kind of come out of his skin a bit. Like, so I could only imagine like it too. Like when you spoke to him, he would have been a bit better to talk to.
Yeah. Oh, probably. Like even since I've met him and through the gym and everything like that, like I've seen a totally different person in comparison to where I first met Will. But him and me have very similar qualities in the fact that like fucking awkward when I meet new people or try and talk to new people. So I walked up to him and he was doing like dumbbell pressing or something. And I just walked up shitting my pants and I was like, oh, hey, excuse me. And he thought I wanted the bench. So he just got up and walked away. Was like, oh, sorry. And just walked off. And I was like, oh, no, like I wanted to talk to you. And then I just kind of asked him and was like, oh, do you coach people? Even though I knew he was a coach, I knew this was his whole job. And I was like, oh, so like, do you coach people who've never competed? Because like, I want to be coached.
It's so funny. When I heard it on the podcast, I was just like, it's so funny. It's like, oh.
It was so fucking awkward. And like, fortunately from that process on, Mickey, anyone who knows Mickey, Mickey's the talker. Yeah. And every interaction I had with Will, Mickey was there to some degree. So it was just like, it was easy from that point on.
Yeah.
And then obviously things transitioned to the point where now I get to work with them and for them and have done so for, just over 12 months.
They're both great people. Everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
That's pretty funny, yeah, because like the first time I ever met Will was at, I can't remember his last name, but Mike from overseas, Seminar of Valhalla, I think it was like 7 years ago. And Will was like still abnormally huge back then. Like, and I was like, who the hell is this humongous gorilla dude walking in the door? Like, and Mickey was like really petite then, like in little. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, who's this guy? I don't even know who he is. I've never seen him before. So, yeah. But I didn't get coached from Will till about 2 years after that. But, yeah, so, like, obviously you've come to a point now in your life where you've been a bit more open about your mental health. Do we want to go into a little bit about that and, like, when you discovered about that and how it's affected you over the past couple of years and, you know?
Yeah. So, funnily enough, like, mental health to a degree has been something I've been pretty open about from the start. Yeah. So I kind of mentioned it and brushed on it, but when I first started going to the gym, it was going through like, I was going through a pretty severe bout of depression. And through that period, I actually attempted suicide. So I attempted to hang myself and obviously not successful. And it's weird, but it's kind of like the best thing that ever happened to me. That's because funny. Instead of like being alone and being with my own thoughts, I just go to the gym. That's what I mean by like I'd be there at like 11 or 12 or 1 or whatever it might be, because I just had a job at that point that I could kind of, I was not working all that much. So it was like very large amounts of opportunity to just go and train whenever I wanted. And I worked out training at night was way better because then I could just go home and sleep. Yeah, so I kind of dealt with that and just used the gym to go through it. At that point, I didn't go to a doctor. I didn't go to a psychologist. I didn't go to anything because I just didn't know these options were available. I didn't know anything of this. I'd confided in my family and that was pretty much it for me.
How long ago was that?
18 turning 19, so yeah. Like 7 years ago, 9 years ago nearly.
Just a topic I want to touch on a bit there, like as well, because I remember 7 years ago when I first went for my, like, because it would be 8 years this year when I first started seeking help. But back then it was like frowned upon, like as a male as well. Like people kind of didn't be like, hey, let's talk about mental health on social media or let's like go see a psych or something like that. People, it wasn't so much frowned upon, but it was, a lot of people were ashamed of it and they didn't embrace like trying to get help because of that reason. They were afraid that everyone would judge. And did you find that it was similar like that with you?
Not really. I didn't even know that they were available. Like I didn't know what a psychologist was. I didn't know that there was like mental health plans available through the GP, like covered by Medicare. I didn't know any of that. The only thing that I knew or had like an ability to do was, of all things, as a like a Facebook, or sorry, not a Facebook, like more or less a charity online, Livin'. So those boys are based out of the Gold Coast. And like I'm from Townsville, I'm from a small town. And in the space of about 6 to 9 months, there was like 10 people I knew that killed themselves around the same time. And so Livin' was like a really big thing popping off then through that community. And obviously I'd caught on to the back end of it through myself and the stuff I was going through. And I kind of just, I don't know, I kind of tried to get involved with that a little bit. So it wasn't necessarily as if I was like seeking help from them, but I was just kind of like trying to get involved in their events or just go and like meet up with them when they were doing certain things and all of that sort of stuff. So it was trying to get help, but like not really knowing where help was.
Because I found a similar situation, except everyone was always willing to tell me I had a problem, but never willing enough to guide me in the right direction to get help for that problem. So whether it be previous partners or friends or people I'd had falling outs with or family members, always were willing to say, look, you have a problem, I think you should seek help, but never the direction of like, hey, here's where you should go talk to someone about your problem. And that's what I found, it was really hard because I literally had to pick up and put one foot forward and find my own way in seeking help. And it was like you, I actually tried to kill myself at 30 and then I was like, holy shit, like if I want to live, I need to like get help. So
yeah, it wasn't until a similar, not so much similar situation, but like another point of really high, low mental health happened when I was around 21, 22, that through that process, someone actually was like, oh, you know, you can go to the doctor and like they can send you through to a psychologist, because I wasn't making all that much money back then. And I was like, oh, psychologists are expensive. I can't afford that. Like what's, you know, I don't have an option to do that. And then they're like, oh, just go get the mental health plan set up. And at the time when I went to the doctor the first time, he's like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to put you on these antidepressants and I will set you up on a mental health plan. He was pretty good about it. He's like, you know, good luck. Come back to me if you need anything. And then I did start going to psychology, which helped immensely at that point in time. And through that process was referred through to a psychiatrist where the psychiatrist actually diagnosed me with borderline personality disorder. I was referred through for ADHD and the psychiatrist diagnosed me with BPD. I was like, oh, fuck. I didn't even know what it was.
And when you do look up the traits of BPD, it can be fucking scary as shit.
Oh, yeah. It was a pretty scary process. Like, as I said, I was 21, so I'm not like, I wasn't that emotionally mature yet. And she was a bit like shit about her diagnosis. This is one thing I've learned through uni myself, and the way in which you talk to people and talk to clients and patients, etc., dictates how they feel about a certain situation. She's like, oh yeah, like good news is you don't have ADHD, but the bad news is you've got borderline personality disorder. And I was like, what? I was like, what the fuck is that? She's like, yeah, cool. So I'll give you a script for antidepressants and or SSRIs. And yeah, just go back to your psych and deal with it. See you later. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? What is this?
Yeah.
And then I went home and Googled it and I broke down. I was like, I'm broken. Yeah. I'm done.
And it's funny you say that, because I remember, because I obviously, people know, I don't actually really know that I was misdiagnosed, because I haven't really spoke about it yet, but I was misdiagnosed with BPD at first, and now I have been diagnosed with ADHD and ASD. And so like when I got diagnosed BPD, similar, bro, exactly the same thing. I went home and Googled it, but except my psych was a lot more helpful. He put me through a course of DBT. So like, but then that same thing, man, I wasn't making much money either. But this course was like $2,500. And I was like, how the fuck do I pay for that? So yeah, very similar. And my psych was still $100 a week, $100 a fortnight, but he was $200 without like the mental health plan. And like even $100 a week at that stage of my life was a lot of fucking money.
Yeah. Well, see that, yeah, my psychologist did try and send me through to the DBT, yeah. And I just didn't have the money. The only two that were available on the Gold Coast, one was $3,500 and one was $2,500. Neither of them offered payment plans. And that was it. Like there's no rebate, there was no assistance, there was no extra help, there was nothing. It was just, oh yeah, come up with the money or don't.
That was the same as me.
So I kind of just had to not do it.
I was lucky I had some money saved at the point and I just paid for it, got it done, and I did it. It actually helped me. I'm kind of glad I did it because it helped me in my job today as a coach, but to understand emotion a bit better, because like with my ASD, like I'm very cold. Like if someone was to be like, oh, I didn't train because, you know, my dog ate my homework, I'm just like, just do fucking train it. No, I'm thinking in the back of my head, but like, you know, like it's just to like be able to switch into another person to kind of like just account for other people because of that. Yeah, that's why they kind of think I had BPD, was because of the way my emotion regulated. Like I could be from like happy to sad within like, it all it'd take is someone just to say something and it trigger me. And you probably understand that too.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, right? Because we mentioned it before, but I'm currently back seeing a psychologist again, different psychologist this time. Going through the process of just, you know, had some shit kick off last year, the end of last year, the start of this year, just kind of trying to find my way back to a point of normality, I guess you could say. And the current psychologist I'm seeing at the moment is like, hey, man, like, I hate to break it to you, but you 100% have ADHD. He goes, you don't have borderline personality disorders. He goes, you've got borderline personality disorder traits and characteristics. So, like, there's definitely aspects of who you are and why you are due to BPD, but everything that I'm seeing and everything you're telling me is ADHD. It's like all the anxiety, all of the way you feel, everything that you do, and the reason you have to be busy all the time, the reason you can't sit still, the reason, and just listed everything. And he's like, you have ADHD. So, I'm currently actually in the process of going back to a different psychiatrist to try and get diagnosed correctly, to get medication that helps with those symptoms and those issues, so that I can sort of then continue to see the psychologist and work on the things I need to work on that aspect. But I'd be able to do so more clearly, because like my mind's not constantly going 1,000 miles an hour like it does at the moment.
I can relate to that.
So that's a kind of a process, to be honest.
And the thing is too, like for anyone listening in, like the process, it's so fucked up how the system, because right, when I figured out that I had ADHD and it wasn't BPD, it was more stressful trying to get diagnosed than it was me finding out that. So the process, and then I had to pay $2,000 to get diagnosed for ADHD, just for someone to give me a piece of paper and say,
oh, shit,
he's like, you've got ADHD, now go see the psychologist to get medication. Like, literally, like, and it cost me $2,500. If that was, like, 7 years ago, there's no fucking way I would have been able to afford it. And it's lucky enough nowadays that like they have payment plans and all that type of stuff, shit, you know, whereas back then you wouldn't have been able to. But it's so stressful. Like they need, I feel like they need to make the system a little bit easier so that people can actually seek help.
Oh, yeah. It's thrown me for a six as well. And I actually had this conversation with someone the other day. Like if I was someone in a worse off position, mentally, financially, whatever it might be, to have to go through the process I'm currently going through just to get answers, I understand why our rates of suicide and mental health are so high, because like I'm a very logical person and I can rationalize things to a degree. Sometimes I do struggle, which is obviously like just natural. But like if I was anyone else and I'd had to go through this process, like, you know, you go to the GP to get the referral to the psychologist. You go to the psychologist, which takes time because they're busy. The psychologist has referred me through back to my GP to get a referral to a psychiatrist. So I have to then go back to the psychologist to get him to write me a letter to give to the GP that the GP is going to again give to the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist I need to book in with, who is again a long process because he's busy. Go from the psychiatrist back and just sort everything out. And I'm like, this is probably going to take like probably 4 to 6 weeks to complete fully.
So the first person I rang up about eight to get diagnosed with, it was $3,000. And they were like, we've got a 2-year waiting list. And I was like,
oh, good. That's good. I'm
like,
good.
Yeah, because that's going to help me. See you later. Like, and then I rang up. I think it was like probably about 6 places. And I got the price down to like under $2,000. And they had a spot which was like the end of last year, which was still a like 3 to 4 month wait. And it was like, it's just crazy because of the fact that like someone like myself whose emotions like completely change so quickly and erratically, like you said, if I was in a worse situation where I didn't have money, I was probably not in control of my emotions and the things I go through on a day-to-day basis. Like, no wonder like suicide rate is so high because of the fact that it's easier for someone just to end it all than try and go through the motions of it. And then someone like myself, I don't know about you, what you're like, but with ADHD, like I can start something and it's so hard for me to finish it sometimes. Like, so for me to start looking up phone calls and calling people up and trying to find stuff, if that gets too hard, I'll just throw it in the fucking too hard basket.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I got the referral last Sunday, so not yesterday, last Sunday, and it took me 4 days. Like I had this guy's number and it took me 4 days to call him, and then I worked out that he didn't work the day I called him.
That's the worst thing.
And then I was like, fuck, now I have to wait, like now I've had to wait the weekend to call him this morning.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's dragged out longer than it needed to. Whereas if I was proactive or whatever, I could have just called him last week, probably had an appointment whenever and just started the process. But I was just like, nah, oh, it's all good. I'll call him tomorrow. Oh, nah, oh, like I'll call him tomorrow. It's all good. And now I'm like, yeah, it's not all good. Yeah. I need to call
him. It's like you hit like a low and you're like, fuck, I got to call him. You know, it's a similar to me.
Then you beat yourself up about
exactly.
it.
Exactly, like totally. And I fully understand that. And it's like with these traits, like some, they need to make an easier system for things to work. Like I understand you got to get referrals and whatnot, but like what you just said where you have to get a referral to a referral to a referral to a referral, like that process for someone who has ADHD is fucking like really stressful. Like you have high anxiety. Like that would have made you so anxious, it's not funny.
Yeah, it did. And like unfortunately I'm in a position now financially where I can afford to pay for these things if I need to. I'm in a position where I have availability throughout the middle of the day on weekdays.
Yeah.
Because like if you're someone who doesn't, it's 9 to 5 they basically work.
Yeah.
This psych I'm going back to, the psychiatrist, is 9 to 5, 9 to 4 Monday to Thursday. Yeah. Like if you don't have an ability or like to get out of work or whatever, that's a hard process. Totally. I'm lucky that I have an ability to do so, and I have the means in which like if I have to pay for it privately, then I can fund it myself.
Yeah, totally.
But if you don't have that ability, like it'd be fucking hard. It'd be really hard.
Yeah, totally. So let's go a little bit into powerlifting. So what has powerlifting done for your mental health? So over the years, obviously you're talking about gym helped you and stuff like that, but so far in the last couple of years, yep. like how, what have you found like that it's helped you with all your struggles and stuff?
Powerlifting to me has actually offered me an ability to have a performance focused metric that I can work towards that is solely dictated upon how much I'm willing to yep. put in. So you put in, you get out what you put in, essentially. And for me, it's like if I slack off and don't do the shit I know I need to do, then my performance is affected. And there's no one else to blame but me. Whereas if I put in the work, I do the shit I need to do, I tick the boxes, I day in, day out, I'm doing these things, then at the end of the prep, whatever, when you compete, like shit comes together.
Yeah.
And it gives you a sense of accomplishment. And you know that like no one can take that from you because you're the one who did it.
Yeah. One of the things that I like, I was talking to my psych about, they didn't know too much about like powerlifting and that. And then I explained it to them. And they're like, the reason why you're so, like you love powerlifting so much is because you're consistently chasing the dopamine hit. And it's like, it doesn't matter like where, what you're doing, whether it's like a small accomplishment or whatever, you might like put 2.5 kilos on your bench next week, but it like fulfills that dopamine hit that I never had. So, and it's so simplified because of what it is. Like it's not simple, but like it's simplified. There's always some form of achievement in something that you're doing. And it's always like, that's why yes. you're always moving forward in it. So yeah. Like, do you find a similar?
Yeah, we can always get bigger, better, faster, stronger, more powerful, more everything.
Yeah, and there's
something. There's always just something to tick along.
Yeah. So how with someone that's been through the mental health stuff you've been through as well, how did you find that with coaching? So do you find that you also take on other people's emotions when they're going through stuff, or do you find that you understand them a little bit better?
Probably a combination of both. Like I'd say I'm a bit of an empath, which is dependent on the situation. Right now for me at the moment with the way I'm feeling and the way everything is, that's a lot harder for me to deal with.
Yeah.
And there's been times where I've had to express that to clients and I'm like, hey, like I'm not actually doing that great at the moment. I can't have you. And I'm very fortunate. I've got a very, very good group of clients and like I've had most of my clients for quite a few years. And they all understand and they understand what I'm going through and things like that. And I say to them, like, I'm here for you. You know, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not here to help you with your problems. I'm here to help you with your training. And hopefully that has a carryover to positive effects in your life. You know, every now and again, they're going to rant to me. They're going to do all of this, that, and the other, and that's fine. But I feel as a coach, like we do take on those things. Like if someone comes in and they're having the worst day of their life, you need to then turn that around so they're not having the worst day of their life by the time they leave. Or vice versa. Someone comes in and you're having a bad day and they're having the best day of their life. You need to make sure that like you sort of soak that energy up
yeah.
to bring yourself to their level because you don't want to, nobody wants to go to the fucking sad, depressing PT who's just down all the time.
Oh, totally. I'm exactly the same as you, man. Like I take on people's emotions very easily. Like someone could come in like the room with a bad mood. And like it's like I absorb it like instantly, like it just yeah. fully carries over to me. And you know, like I guess because I'm an online coach, I don't see people in person as much. But still, like I see the same thing. Like people have bad training week or whatever, and it's still my job to get them into a better training week or make them feel better at least. So I do find myself doing like a lot of like. Talking and chatting to people, but that's our job too. But I do base our crew at River City around like my experience and stuff before too. So like I tried to build the environment where everyone supports each other so I don't have to do it so much as well. So that's a big thing in our group that like a lot of people just support each other. And I know Nexus is exactly yeah. the same, bro. Like everyone.
Yeah, Nexus is almost identical with the teams and the Facebook groups and the Discord chats and even just in the gym itself being a small community of people who just all love each other and get along and support each other. And yeah, it's awesome.
And Will's heard me whinge for 5 years. I'm surprised that he hasn't sent me on to Zach or someone else yet. he's probably seen the motions of my roller coaster like this. Like, so he's probably, yeah. But so what's the plans for your own powerlifting at the moment? Like, well, what are you looking at doing next?
Currently, the goal is I'm going to be competing at Battle in Valhalla in November. so GPC. I've been competing for APL for the last 2 years, and it sounds so bad, but the legitimate reason I switched to GPC is I just don't want to walk out my squats in wraps anymore. That was like legitimately one of my biggest reasons is because my goal this year, which I will achieve, I already know it, is to squat over 300. And I just didn't want to, keep walking it out.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree with you. I'm really hoping that for Zero Pro, they use a mono, not a fucking combo.
Well, if based upon the equipment, probably. Thomas has just brought out his own range of monos and stuff, so it would make sense.
Yeah. I'm really hoping they do, because like if they do, I'll like be over the moon, because I'm the same as you. I'm close to that 300 mark, and I'm like, I really, after that 280 that you and Will spotted me, I don't feel like walking anything heavier than that.
Nah.
I should have died that day.
Yeah, I walked 280 out at comp, and it kind of pushed me a little bit forward, and I fell into my knees and nearly fucking died. I stood up. It was all G. Like, I actually got the lift. Yeah. But I just felt myself fall into my toes and just somehow regather it. But I was like, man, if I try and do that with 300 plus, I'm either going to lose both my knees or it's just not going to end well for me.
Your knees are probably still hurting.
And I also, I'm not a huge fan of Alico benches.
Oh, really? Why?
No, I just find they're slippery.
Oh, what?
I like the Valhalla bench because you can kind of sink into it.
Oh, true. I actually love the fucking Alico bench, man.
These are the most like pathetic rationales as to why I changed. It's just pure laziness and preference. No, yeah. I don't know. There's one or two of the Alico benches I've liked, but then the newer ones I just didn't like as much. And I was just like, oh, well. Plus one of my best mate and one of my clients, he wanted to do GPC as well. So I was like, oh, well, let's just do it together.
Yeah. I used to compete in GPC. I miss the mono a lot.
Mm.
It's one of the reasons why like I would like to go back to something, but the reason I compete in APL is just because I just think it's fair that I can still compete with my clients, or all my clients, even untested or tested, can still compete in the same federation together. So that's why I've stuck with APL for so long.
Don't get me wrong, all my clients are still APL.
Yeah. So that's just the only reason I've stuck with it, just so the community can stay together pretty much. But, yeah, I really hope that for either Nationals and Zero Pro, they do bring back, like, the mono. But I think it's more of a convenience thing than anything. Like, carting the fucking thing around, like...
It's not easy.
And then moving it off stage, it's not easy, which I completely understand. It's easier to move a combo rack than it is a mono.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, so what are your goals for numbers?
300 plus, so 300, 320 squat that's where I'd want to sit. Bench, 180, deadlift, 280, 290.
What are your current numbers now?
280 squat, 170 bench, and 270 for two deadlift.
Yeah, your dead moved easy the other day, those two 270s. I saw that and I was like, fuck, Josh, you're getting a bigger deadlift than me.
Yeah, well, I'm like... Because currently my technical 1RM is 270. Yeah. And so we've worked up to a point where I got it for a double, better than I ever pulled it for a single.
Because you were having problems where you were rounding, didn't you? Like for a while there?
Nah, so I can't supinate I can't supinate either of my forearms.
Oh, so you've come to the hook grip life.
Yeah, I've had to go to hook grip because I can't supinate my hands. So every time I'd go to put one hand under, because I couldn't straighten that arm, it would shift me to one side.
Oh.
And it would always shift to my right side. So my right QL, lumbar, spine, etc., would almost take like 85 to 90% of the load before my hips then shifted back up as I stood.
Yeah.
So all throughout my last prep, it was literally a balance of, okay, we're going to go heavy this week, knowing full well my back's going to go. Yeah. I have to do it. And then I was like two low weeks of deadies where it was just nothing.
Oh, true.
And it was just shit. Like knowing full well I was going into the gym and my back was going to hurt post it, to a point where like I couldn't bend down, I couldn't lift shit up for clients, etc. And there's nothing we could really do, like even working with a physical therapist and stuff, trying to get more supination in my forearm. It just wasn't working because like obviously at that point in prep, you're just so jacked up that shit just doesn't work. And then I was warming up backstage for deadies and threw my back out before I even got to the platform and had to just still push through and still manage 3 from 3 somehow. But
fuck, it's crazy what we go through as powerlifters, the things we challenge, but we still push through.
I was talking to someone the other day about this. I was like, man, we honestly do the dumbest fucking shit.
But I believe myself. Yeah. For a sport that has no money in it at all, you fucking make no money off it. You actually lose out by paying for shit.
Yep.
Well, people like us are lucky because we're coaches, but we put our fucking bodies through hell and just torture just to put numbers on a fucking piece of paper that mean nothing to no one but ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the worst and best sport ever because there's no money. Yeah. There's no future in actual competing. I know myself that I'm not ever going to be like highly competitive, and I have no disillusion about that, fortunately. So I'm literally just doing all of this as a hobby. The shit I do is for a hobby.
I've been doing this for 9 years, bro, and I'm still like I said to someone the other day, I go, the day that I pull 300 and squat 300, you're going to see me fall to my knees and cry, and then I'll kiss the barbell, and they're like, why? I'm like, because it's been fucking 9 years that I've been chasing 300 kilos. Yeah.
This will be my third year.
Yeah. Like, I wish that, I'm not, literally, I am like you. I know I'm not going to be the best fucking, I'm not going to be the Will Cross of, powerlifting. I'm definitely not going to be the fucking number one that wins Pro Raw ever. And I accepted that, and I understand that. I'm not talented as a lifter, but I will still push until my body won't let me push anymore. So,
yeah.
And that's the thing. And this is the things I try and push into my clients as well. You might not be the best, but you can be the best version of yourself. And no one's stopping you but yourself from being that. And pushing through those things, you know, I feel like people like myself and you who have been through mental health stuff, it allows us to understand more about the other side of us as well, where we're struggling through mental health stuff. It's like, if I can get through all this shit in the gym, why can't I get through this shit in my life?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it helps to understand that, you're way more capable than you believe you are.
Yeah, totally. And it just allows you more mental strength. And it gives you clarity to move forward when things get hard, in times like now where you're going through some of the shit and changes. One of the things that someone said to me a few years back was, you know, you go through seasons in life where things change and people disappear out of your life, but it's just you preparing yourself for your new season that's about to happen. So, you know, you might go through this diagnosis, get some medication that makes you move forward in your life, be able to work better, be able to train better, and be happier and deal with your life a bit better.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the goal, honestly. At the end of the day, is just keep pushing to not only myself but others that, it's actually possible.
Yeah. And, you know, you might have that one client that comes through in the future and he might be struggling and going through whatever, and you'd be like, look, I went through this and this is what I did. Now you just go get help there in those areas. And you might save their life, bro. Then that's all this is worth it, you know, in the end, you know.
100%.
Because I look back now and I think to myself, I never had that one person in my life that could have said to me and helped me until I was 32, 33 after I'd already started seeking help. And Will was one of those people that accepted me for who I was back then and the shit that I went through. And he's fucking helped me with so much of my life, and same as Mickey as well. Zach, as young as Zach is and as immature as Zach can be, he's helped me with a lot of shit too. And and you know, that's what I mean about these communities in powerlifting and in my crew Nexus and that, people supporting each other and just driving each other forward through a sport where we bash each other every day just to get some numbers on the board. It means something to all of us.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good way. I think it's a good way to finish it up. Where can people find you on socials if they want to get coached? Or
socials is literally just my name, at Josh Sternberg. I've got Instagram, and that's it. I have Facebook, but I don't use it, so don't contact me on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, Instagram is probably the best.
Yeah.
I'm on there all the time, or any of Nexus's platforms, yeah. NexusPerformance.gym or NexusPerformance.aus. You'll find me through there as well.
Yeah, sweet as. Thanks for coming on, Josh.
Not a problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Barbell Coach and Physio Podcast. Subscribe to hear future episodes and join us on Instagram at Barbell Coach and Physio and at Fox.Physio and River City Barbell _Oz.